No, but we went to the same high school. At different times, of course. Everybody knew who Melvin was. I was stunned when he was arrested for the murders. And his parents' identities were established through their dental records here? I guess that's right, yes. I remember there wasn't enough left of their, well, you know. Right. Is your grandfather still alive? He is, and he still lives in the area. Any chance we can talk to him? You can try. Decker cocked his head. Meaning? Meaning he has dementia and resides at an assisted living center. Does he have lucid moments? Occasionally. He used to have more, but I'm afraid he's slipping away at an alarming rate. It's very sad when your own grandfather can't recognize you.
I'm sure it is,
said Jameson sympathetically. Decker said, can we give it a shot? With what goal in mind? Asked Fisher. Information, said Decker. You never know where a new piece might help the investigation. And what exactly are you investigating? That's not something we can comment on publicly, said Decker, his tone becoming very official. Oh, right, of course. Fisher quickly wrote the address down on a slip of paper and slid it across. I'll call and tell them you're going to come by. Decker looked at the name. Louis Fisher, Sr. I'm Louis Fisher III. My father is the junior. Decker and Jameson rose. He said, thanks, I appreciate it. Fisher turned to Jameson, who quickly closed her mouth so her teeth weren't visible. You should smile more often, said Fisher. You have very nice teeth. Outside the office, Jameson said,
let's hope Fisher Sr. can give us a lead. We could sure use one.
It's why we do the drill, Alex.
Please don't use that word so close to a dentist's office.
Chapter 43. Louis Fisher Sr. had obviously done well for himself because the facility he was in was an upscale private one. The building was designed to look like an antebellum plantation, with tall, broad columns and a huge porch that was filled with rocking chairs and residents doing the rocking. The interior was decorated with bright wallpaper, wooden chair railing, 6-inch crown molding, and thick plush carpets. There was even a game room with a pool table and an old-fashioned soda fountain. The bulletin board in the lobby was filled with activity sheets. Senior citizens were walking or rolling to their next appointments. The place was full of energy and enthusiasm as Decker and Jameson strolled down the wide corridor, accompanied by one of the staff. She was dressed in crisp blue scrubs. Her name tag read, Deb. She waved and greeted residents as they walked along.
Nice place,
said Jameson.
Everyone seems really happy. A lot better than anything the state offers,
said Deb.
But you have to pay for it, and it's not cheap. This is definitely for the upper echelon. We get folks from like a 200-mile area because the facility is so unique, and this part of Texas is big and isolated.
She sighed.
I could never afford to come here when I get to be their age.
They reached a set of double doors with a sign reading Memory Unit overhead. Deb had to use her key card to access the doors.
Is that so no one in the unit can wander away?
Noted Jameson.
Exactly,
she said as they passed through the opening.
We don't want anyone getting lost.
She led them down the hall and then turned toward a door about halfway down. She knocked.
Dr. Fisher, you have visitors.
They heard a grunt from inside. Deb turned to them.
He has good and bad days. I'm not sure which one this will be. He gets very frustrated, like many of our memory unit patients.
She eyed the FBI credential that rode on Decker's hip.
Is Dr. Fisher in some sort of trouble?
He's in no trouble at all, said Decker.
Well, that's a relief. You know, when he first came here, his memory was razor sharp, probably better than yours.
I seriously doubt that, said Decker, as he pushed open the door and went inside. A startled Deb looked at Jameson, who gazed at her awkwardly.
It's a long story,
she said.
We'll let you know when we're done. Thanks.
She joined Decker inside the room and closed the door. Fisher was sitting up in the chair next to his bed. He had on a hospital gown, and his feet were resting in white slippers. He looked to be in his late 80s, bent and frail. When he looked up at them, Decker could see a lot of the grandson in the man. Dr. Fisher, he said.
Who the hell are you? Fisher barked.
This might be one of the bad days,
whispered Jameson. Decker grew closer. I'm a friend of your grandson. So is she. Fisher turned his gaze to Jameson.
She's not my grandson.
No, she's a friend of your grandson's. Fisher looked down at his lap. Jameson knelt next to him.
This is a very nice room.
Fisher looked up at her.
Do I know you?
I'm Alex, and this is Amos.
Amos and Andy, like the show? Said Fisher.
No, Alex and Amos. He's Amos. I'm Alex.
He glanced at Decker.
You're very large.
Yes, I am. He pulled up another chair and sat down. Your grandson told us you were a dentist for a long time. You had a lot of patients. Fisher looked puzzled.
Dentist? My grandson? My grandson.
Lewis,
said Jameson helpfully.
My name is Lewis, he barked.
Then he added in a quieter, desperate tone.
Isn't it?
Yes, and he was named after you. Fisher wrapped his head with his knuckles.
This just all...
I know,
said Jameson soothingly.
I'm sure it's frustrating.
Decker said, You were a dentist, Dr. Fisher. You had lots of patients. Do you remember the Mars family? Roy and Lucinda? And Melvin?
Mars? Like the planet? Are you talking about the planet Mars? It's the red planet.
He smiled and looked pleased. No, not the planet. A family named Mars. They were killed. And the records in your office were used to confirm their identity.
Killed? The planet was killed? Are you crazy?
Jameson put a hand on Decker's arm.
Let me try.
She turned to Fisher and said very quietly,
They were patients of yours a long time ago. 20 years. They were killed. Their bodies were burned, so they had to use their dental records to identify them. Records from your office.
She looked at Fisher hopefully, but all she got back was a blank stare. A minute went by, and no one broke the silence. Decker was about to say something when Jameson held up a hand.
Dr. Fisher, I have a tooth problem. Do you remember me? I'm Lucinda Mars. This is my husband, Roy Mars. He has a tooth problem, too. Can you help us? We're your patients. You have our records.
They waited a long moment. At first, it didn't seem Fisher would answer her. Fisher said,
Maxillary second premolar.
What was that, Dr. Fisher?
Said Jameson.
Maxillary second premolar,
he repeated, shaking his head. Jameson said,
What about it?
Not right.
What wasn't right?
The second premolar, just not right.
Jameson knelt down next to him.
Whose, Roy's or Lucinda's?
Just not right. Should have said, not right.
He looked up at Decker.
Who the hell are you?
A very grateful man, Decker rose and said to Jameson. Can you stay here and see if you can get anything more out of him? I'll come back and get you.
Where are you going?
To find a maxillary second premolar. Chapter 44.
A premolar? Said Bogart. Seriously?
He and Decker were standing in the musty warehouse where old police records were kept. That's what he said. The maxillary second premolar. Something was not right with it. They stared at the shelves full of haphazardly stacked boxes. Bogart said, The sergeant I talked to said the records were a little... Unorganized, finished Decker. I'd say he was seeing the glass half full. He took off his coat and rolled up his sleeves. Well, let's get to it. The files were indeed in a shambles. The years were sometimes mixed up, and the boxes themselves were not well inventoried. On more than one occasion, the filing papers inside were just blank. 6 hours went past without any success. Decker's phone rang. It was Jameson, and she was not happy.
I took a cab back to the motel. When you said stay here and see if I could get something more out of him, I didn't think you meant forever.
I'm sorry, Alex. I got distracted.
Gee, what a shock.
Did he say anything else that might be helpful?
Only that something wasn't right. He just kept repeating that.
No clue on whether we're talking about Roy or Lucinda?
No. Then he just fell asleep. I've been calling you for the last 3 hours, by the way.
I took my coat off. I heard this call because I had picked up my coat when you phoned.
Where are you?
he told her. But we're not having much success.
Until now, called out Bogart.
He had lifted a box off the shelf and opened it.
I gotta go, said Decker, and he clicked off.
They pulled all the items out of the box and laid them on a table. Decker found it first. He pulled up the X-ray sheets for the two Marses that were labeled with their respective names.
I googled premolar before I got here, Decker said.
He pulled out his phone and brought up an image of a mouth full of teeth.
These are second premolars.
He pointed at spots on the X-rays.
They help with mastication, or chewing.
The one on the right is the 4, and the left is the 13, in dentist numbering vernacular.
All fascinating, said Bogart sarcastically. But what was wrong, according to Fisher?
The dental records for the Marses from Fisher's office matched the dental records taken from the bodies at the crime scene.
Alex couldn't find out. The guy has dementia, but he just blurted out, maxillary second premolar.
He stopped, pulled out his phone, and punched in a number.
Alex, did Fisher mention any numbers?
Numbers?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, said Decker, obviously disappointed.
But it was weird. He held up 4 fingers a couple of times.
4? You sure?
Yes. And he kept looking at them like they meant something.
Thanks.
Decker
clicked off and turned to Bogart. Okay, it was the right premolar. They studied the X-rays.
I don't see anything on Lucinda's X-ray, said Bogart. But Roy's number 4 has a filling.
Decker looked at it. You're right.
So was Fisher saying that Roy Mars didn't have a filling in number 4? That's why something was wrong?
But if so, why wouldn't he have pointed that out back then?
Decker picked up his phone again, called Fisher's office, and a minute later was talking to the dentist.
Your grandfather was very helpful, he said, but I have a question for you.
Okay, shoot, said Fisher.
Tell me the procedure for when the police want to get copies of your records.
They send in a court order and we answer it.
How so? Do you personally pull the records?
Not always. But if not me, then someone on my staff does.
Who checks for accuracy?
Well, all of our files are carefully organized, cross-checked, and labeled 7 ways from Sunday. We also have electronic copies of everything. Nature of a medical practice these days. No room for error.
But 20 years ago?
Well, it was different. My grandfather still kept excellent records, but they were stored manually and labeled with the patient's information. Name, address, social security number, and individual patient file number.
Do you have anyone on your staff who worked with your grandfather 20 years ago?
Yes, Melissa Dowd.
Can I speak to her?
Where is all this going?
Please, time is of the essence.
Hold on while I get her.
A minute later, a woman answered the phone.
This is Melissa.
Melissa, Amos Decker with the FBI. I was wondering about your filing system 20 years ago.
Yes, Dr. Fisher told me. Well, lots of practices had transitioned to some sort of computer system by then, but Fisher Sr. was old school, so our operation was still manual. We used a typewriter. Labels were made up for all patient files. It was all very organized. We never made any mistakes with record keeping.
Do you remember getting the court order to turn over the Marses' records?
I didn't personally pull those files, but I do remember the request. We'd never had such a request before, for a murder, anyway.
Did someone have to authenticate the records during the trial?
Yes. I was the one who did that, because I was the one who really maintained the records.
So Dr. Fisher wasn't involved in that?
No, he was very busy and couldn't take time off to come to the trial. It was the only time I was called on to do that. It was kind of exciting.
Did Dr. Fisher ever mention to you that there might be something wrong with the records?
No, not that I recall. Was there something wrong?
She asked anxiously. Decker ignored this question and said, Do you remember who cleaned your office building back then?
Cleaned our office building?
Yes.
Well, it's the same firm that does it now. Quality Commercial Cleaners. They do all the offices here.
And so they had keys to your office?
Well, yes, that's normal practice, but we've never had any problems.
Thanks.
Decker clicked off and looked at Bogart. The FBI agent was studying him.
Is this going where I think it's going?
I don't think Roy Mars died in the bedroom that night. I think a nurse or technician pulled those records and sent them to the police, and then Dowd authenticated them at trial. But she would just be looking at the names and other file criteria in order to do that. Maybe sometime later, maybe a lot later, Fisher Sr. looked at the records and saw a filling in the number 4 premolar where he hadn't put one. Well, we can't assume it wasn't the other way around. It might be he was referring to Lucinda's records. She didn't have a filling, but maybe Fisher had put one in there.
Agreed. And why he didn't come forward then, I don't know. Maybe he was starting to feel the effects of the dementia by then.
He sighed and added, "Well, this opens up a lot of questions." Bogart nodded. "Well, the big one for me is, if it wasn't Roy's or Lucinda's body, whose was it?" Chapter 45. "How are you going to break this news to Melvin?" asked Bogart. They were driving back to the motel from the warehouse. "It's not a fact, it's a theory. I have no proof."
"But it's a pretty good theory based on some facts," replied Bogart.
"If we assume it was Roy Mars that faked his death, that would explain the shotgun to the face and the bodies being burned. Dental records would be the first way to ID the bodies. The teeth were relatively intact."
"But he would have had to get into the dentist's office and swap out the records with those of the body that was discovered."
"Lucinda worked for a cleaning company in the area. I'm betting it was quality commercial cleaners. That would have given her and Roy access to the dentist's office after hours."
"Wait a minute, do you think the other body was Lucinda's?"
"I don't know. Maybe not. If Roy is alive and he killed the two people that were found, I have a hard time believing he would have shotgunned his wife in the face and then set her on fire."
"And set up his son for the crime? Because that's a big part of this, too."
"And maybe the most inexplicable.
But I keep coming back to the two people. It's a small town. How could two people just disappear and no one know?"
Decker said, "They could have been drifters, not from here. He stopped and closed his eyes.
The frames in his head whirred back and forth as he searched for the precise statements he'd been given by the police and Melissa Dowd.
There were two of them. Burglary, missing person, drunks getting in fights was the first. We'd never had such a request before, for a murder anyway, was the second.
He took out his phone and punched in a number. A minute later, he had Melissa Dowd on the line again. She sounded a little put out at being called away from her work again, but Decker brushed right past the annoyed tone in her voice. He had put the phone on speaker so that Bogart could hear.
Decker said, "When we last spoke, you said that you'd never had a court order for dental records for a murder investigation before."
"That's right."
"But the way you said it implied that you had received other court orders."
"Well, just the one time. It was right before the one for the Mars's murder, actually. Now that I think about it, sort of odd."
"Was it for a missing person?"
"That's right. How did you know that?"
"Educated guess. Can you tell us about it?"
"Well, it was one of our patients, and the police thought they had found his body in the woods, but it had been disfigured by some wild animals. They had learned that we were the man's dentist and thus asked for the records, but it wasn't a match. It wasn't him."
"And this was before the Mars's murder. You sure?"
"Yes, just shortly before."
"Do you remember the man's name?"
"I do, as a matter of fact. His name was Dan Reardon. To my knowledge, they never found him."
"Do you have any records for him?"
"No, they would have been disposed of by now."
"Can you describe him? Race, height, weight, anything?"
"Well, he was a big man. Tall, about 6'4 or so. Over 200 pounds. Dan was in his 50s back then, strongly built."
"White? Black?"
"White."
"Did he have any family?"
"No. His wife had died, and they had no children. He lived on the outskirts of town and kept to himself."
"What did he do for a living?"
"Not much. Odd jobs here and there. Always in hock for something. He'd get some money, and then it would be gone. We often had to write off his charges because he just didn't have the money."
"Well, thanks, Melissa. This really helped a lot."
Decker clicked off and looked at Bogart.
"Always in hock. Get some money and then it would be gone. What are the odds he visited the pawn shop where Roy worked, and then Roy found out they had the same dentist?"
"Clearly the physical descriptions tallied,"
which would have been the reason Roy would have picked him. And with the bodies being burned and the faces obliterated, you would just have to be close enough to sell the deception.
So Roy kidnapped Dan to later substitute his body in the house. Then he killed Dan and either killed another woman or his wife and set the bodies on fire.
And set up his son for the murder. He must have paid off the motel clerk and Ellen Tanner to lie about the time.
And messed with the car so it would break down right in front of the motel. Melvin told us his dad was good at working on cars.
But why, Decker? Why go to all that trouble to implicate your own son and send him to prison?
I don't know, admitted Decker.
Could he have hated Melvin for some reason?
Hating your son is one thing. Doing all of this to put him in prison is something else altogether.
Unless Roy Mars is some sort of psychopath.
He lived here for 20 years without harming anyone, pointed out Decker. This was an elaborate scheme, and it had to have sufficient motivation.
Which brings me back to my earlier question. How are you going to tell Melvin?
Decker looked out the car window, where yet another storm was descending upon them.
Not a clue, he replied.
Chapter 46. When they got back to the motel, Mary Oliver was in the small lobby with Jameson. Both women rose when they walked in.
Any word on Davenport?
Asked Oliver breathlessly.
Bogart shook his head. We're doing everything we can, but so far, nothing. The locals are reporting in to me every hour. There have been no sightings.
Oliver glanced down, obviously distraught.
Are you okay? Asked Bogart.
She balled her hands into fists.
God, this is just so frustrating. First, this man Montgomery comes forward, and that gets Melvin out of prison. Well, you helped too,
said Jameson.
You kept him alive to get to that point.
Surprisingly, Oliver shook her head in disagreement.
I wish I could claim credit for all that, but I can't. I came on relatively recently. I filed a petition to stop the execution, but the court declined to act on it. Melvin's other lawyers had washed their hands of him. I think they thought he was guilty. I read about the case and contacted Melvin. I just had a feeling, you know, that something wasn't right. And then Montgomery coming forward seemed to be a miracle. And now it turns out all of that may have been a lie. But you don't believe that Melvin is guilty, do you?
Asked Jameson.
No, there's something else going on here, something far deeper. But now Davenport has been kidnapped and we may never see her again.
Well, we do have some news, said Bogart. He told them about the discoveries with the X-rays and the possible switching of the dental records. When he was done, both women stared at him, stunned.
I can't believe this,
stammered Oliver.
Why would Roy Mars have done all that?
A good question, said Decker, and one we don't have an answer for. Oliver said,
would it be okay if I worked with all of you on this? I know that you're the professionals, but I don't think anyone wants to get to the bottom of this more than Melvin and I do. And I'm a criminal defense lawyer, so I do know my way around investigations.
Bogart glanced at Decker and Jameson before saying,
another pair of eyes never hurts.
Where's Melvin? Asked Decker.
In his room,
said Oliver.
I've just come from there. Are you going to?
I'm going to try, said Decker, and he set off.
A minute later, he knocked on the door.
Who is it? Mars called out.
Decker.
Decker heard footsteps coming toward the door, and it opened. He said, you up for a walk? Mars gazed at him suspiciously.
Why?
Got something I want to talk to you about.
Is it bad?
It might be. In fact, it probably will be, to you.
Is it about Davenport?
No, it's a little more personal. And I just want you to hear me out, okay? And then you can, well, say what you want to.
Shit, Decker, you definitely got my attention.
Let's go. We might be able to beat the rain. And you might need some air.
They started walking on the shoulder along the road. Decker had his hands shoved deeply in his coat pockets. Mars shot him anxious glances. Come on, man, don't go quiet on me now. My belly's on fire.
Decker took a long breath and plunged into what they had discovered. To his credit, Mars said nothing until he was finished. In fact, he didn't say anything until Decker prompted.
Well?
What do you want me to say?
I don't know. Something.
Mars stopped walking and so did Decker. The two men stared pointedly at each other. Mars said,
"It's pretty clear I knew nothing, really, about my parents. So what you just told me, I guess, hell, it could be true.
Can you think of any reason why your father would want to frame you for murder?"
"Not off the top of my damned head, no," barked Mars. "How would you answer if someone asked you that question about your old man?"
"I'd be pissed, like you are now."
"Well, there you go."
Mars started trudging along again, and Decker matched his stride. A truck zipped past them, and then another car. They moved farther off the road and were soon walking along the edge of a drainage ditch. His gaze on the ground, Mars said,
"If it wasn't my dad's body, do you think it was my mother's?
I have no facts to support it, but other things being equal, I do think it was your mother. One missing person in a small town was enough. Two would have been a red flag to the police when it was followed by two burned-up bodies.
So my father just killed her and then burned her up? How could he do that? I mean, I know he loved her. If I know nothing else about the guy, I know that."
"There might be an explanation."
"Like what?" snapped Mars.
"Like she was dying anyway, and it would not be a painless death. It might be months of agony. Maybe they thought this way was better. I don't know."
"Okay, but my mom never would have been part of framing me for a murder."
"Maybe she didn't know about that." Mars considered this and then said in an exasperated tone,
"Shit, I don't know. I'm not smart enough to figure this out."
"Maybe I'm not either."
"Hell, if you don't, who will?"
"So the murders and the burning were done to allow your father to get away. Your mother's death is explained by her cancer. She wasn't going to go with him, so that was the only way."
"To get away from his past, you mean?"
Decker nodded. "That also might be why he told you he was sorry that night."
"What?"
"When you were hypnotized by Davenport, you told us you came home one night and your dad was there. He was looking sort of scary, but he told you he was sorry. That was it. No explanation. Then he left the room."
"Damn, I forgot about that."
"And it must be something really bad because he had to take such extraordinary steps. He killed this Dan Reardon, Melvin, and used his body as part of the deception. You need to come to grips with that."
"That my old man was a cold-blooded killer?" "Yeah, let me just come to grips with that. Probably only take a few seconds," he added sarcastically.
"Well, he might have been one in the past, but it looked like he reformed until something happened to throw everything out of whack. I think the sequence of events went something like this. Your mother was diagnosed with cancer. It wasn't here because the doctor's office knew nothing about it. So they went somewhere else to get that diagnosis. I don't know where."
"Okay," said Mars. "Then what?"
"They probably were going to tell you the bad news and deal with it like every other family does in such a situation. But then the ESPN piece aired. Someone recognized your dad and or your mother, and everything changed."
"Do you think they threatened them?"
"Maybe, or maybe they didn't wait for the threat to come. They just acted. They switched the dental records. Your father snatched Reardon. You said Ellen Tanner was a recent acquaintance. Your dad could have arranged all that. Same with the motel guy. They're paid off to lie. Then Tanner disappeared, and the motel guy retired to Florida. He probably used the money in his bank account to pay them."
"So you're telling me they lied and sent me to prison for what, less than $3,000 each?"
"I've run into people who'd slit your throat for a cup of coffee," Decker replied bluntly.
"Damn.
And you said your dad was good with cars."
"Yeah, he could fix anything."
"So he could easily have sabotaged your car so it would stall by the motel. He probably drugged your mother and Reardon, shot them, and then burned the bodies. And then he left. He also probably planted the blood in your car." Decker paused.
"He might have driven over to the motel to do it, and at the same time he reversed whatever he'd done to disable your car so it would start when the police showed up there.
And that would explain the person who saw a car in the vicinity of your house that night. Only it was your dad's car, not yours."
"Our cars did look alike.
But what if I'd called my house that night from the motel and told him to come get me?" "I don't think he would have picked up the phone, Melvin. And that would leave you stuck at the motel. So he did all that knowing that I'd be arrested for the crime. But why? The folks coming after him would suspect a deception because they so conveniently died with no faces left and the bodies burned.
but they would probably never think that Roy would frame his own son for the murder. That throws the suspicion off effectively and makes the deaths seem legit. That gives Roy breathing room. He gets away with whatever was in that safe deposit box. And 20 years later, everything starts exploding. Montgomery being paid off, me out of prison, Davenport being kidnapped. Why? They want what's in the box, Melvin. They see you as the last chance to get it. You still think they'll contact you about Davenport? I hope they do. It might be the only chance we have to get her back alive.
Chapter 47. Decker sat in his motel room staring at his laptop. He had typed one word in and was checking the search results. Most people faced with pages of information tended to skim. Decker did not skim. He read it all thoroughly, and down near the bottom of the third page, he found something of interest. This took him to another search, and he read down these pages. This, in turn, had led him to something of greater interest. Then he sat back and drank from the glass of water next to his elbow as he listened to the rain beating down outside. He had heard that Texas had been in a prolonged drought. Well, they might just be coming out of it. He had never seen this much rain before, even in Ohio, where the weather could go through long stretches of inclemency. He put the glass of water down, lining up the water ring precisely, though his thoughts were not nearly as aligned. Chocha did mean prostitute in Spanish, and Decker had learned that the female anatomy that Mars had refused to say out loud under hypnosis was vagina. But chocha also meant something else in another regional dialect of Spanish, in a country other than Spain or Mexico, and that something else might be both informative and problematic. And Decker didn't know how to deal with the problematic part, at least right now. Lucinda had said the word, not Mars's father. Yes, problematic. A couple minutes later, he was knocking on Mars's door after speaking to the FBI agent standing guard there.
"I can tell from the look on your face you got more questions," said Mars wearily when he opened it.
"I do."
"You never get tired?"
"I get tired all the time. I'm fat and in crappy shape."
"You're not as fat as you were, Decker. You want to start working out with me?"
"I'd be dead in 5 minutes."
"I'll start off slow."
"Maybe. Let me ask you something."
Mars sighed and motioned him in. They sat in chairs next to the bed. Decker said, "Did your mother have any family heirlooms?"
Mars laughed out loud. "Heirlooms? Shit, Decker. What, you think she had a pot of gold or something?
You think we'd have been living like we were if she had damn heirlooms?"
Decker was unperturbed.
"Maybe not gold, but how about silver?"
Mars looked like he was going to laugh again, but then he abruptly stopped.
"Damn."
"What?"
"She had a silver teapot.
Where did she say it came from?"
"Like her great-grandmother or something."
"What happened to it?"
"I don't know. She kept it in the bedroom, in her closet."
"Did she polish it?"
"Yeah, sometimes."
"How did she polish it?"
"What do you mean?"
"With a cloth?"
"Yeah."
He paused and concentrated, evidently thinking back.
"But she would finish off the polishing with her fingers?" Decker interjected.
"How'd you know that?"
"You finish off polishing fine silver with your fingers. At least well-trained servants do. Or used to do."
"Servant?"
"House cleaner, expert seamstress, silver polisher, professional clothes presser. Those are all skills of someone working as a servant in a very wealthy household. And that may be where the silver teapot came from."
"Where would my mom have been a servant in a wealthy household? I mean, you're talking like British royalty stuff."
"Actually, you'd be surprised. And maybe it was also the place where she learned Spanish."
"You think rich folks would have just given her a silver teapot?"
"No. I think she probably stole it."
Mars rose and looked down at Decker. "My mother was no thief."
"I'm not saying she was."
"Then what the hell are you saying?"
"She might have been a slave in that household."
"A slave? Are you serious? Where?"
"Did your mother use foul language?"
"Never. She was very proper in that way."
"But she used the word chocha, which could translate to whore or vagina. That doesn't seem very proper." Mars sat back down, looking confused.
Yeah, but she was upset. I told you that.
But it doesn't fit the context of the argument she was having with your father. Where would a whore come in? Was she accusing your father of using a hooker, or of being some kind of pussy?
No, my old man would never have cheated on her, and I don't think anyone would call my father a pussy. And it wasn't like she was angry at him. She was more scared than angry, really.
Which reinforces my point that the word doesn't make sense. If you were using the typical Spanish translation, he added.
Is there an atypical one? Asked Mars warily.
Spanish is obviously spoken in many countries, and other countries and other regions of other countries sometimes have very different translations for the same word.
And did you find one for chocha?
I did.
What country?
Colombia. More specifically, the Cali region. That location is the basis for the theory I've come up with.
Wait, you're saying my mom was from Colombia?
I'm not saying she was from there for certain, but at some point in her life, I think she ended up there, maybe against her will, which is where the slave thing comes in.
Who the hell in Colombia was in the slave trade?
The drug cartels in Cali. I did some research. Back when the cocaine trafficking was centered in Colombia, drug czars would threaten the families of people and use that as leverage to keep them in harness. Or they would kidnap people, especially women, and use them as servants in their households. They took people from other countries, including the United States. I think your mom might have been one, but I think she escaped. And she took that silver teapot with her as partial repayment for what they did to her. It really was a shot in the dark on my part, and I could have been wrong. But I thought she might have taken something with her, just to get back at whoever was holding her.
And you're sure it was Colombia?
But how can you be? Because of the translation. Apparently it's particular only to the Cali area.
But you haven't told me what the translation was.
Chocha in the Valuno dialect means possum.
Mars stared blankly at him. And why would a possum make any more sense than the other translations?
Decker drew a long breath and then just said it. Principally, Melvin, because possums can play dead, which seems to be exactly what your father did.
Chapter 48.
So you think a cartel is behind all this? Asked Bogart.
Decker sat across from him, Milligan, and Jameson in Bogart's room at the motel. Decker had filled the others in on his deductions and his conversation with Mars.
I don't know for sure, but one certainly could be. If Lucinda escaped and also stole from them, they could have come after her. She might have married Roy then, and they fled to Texas together.
Milligan shook his head.
So 20 years later, they get seen on ESPN, and the cartel comes after them again? According to you, she was a house servant. Why would they care? And back then, the cartel wars were going hot and heavy. Drug bosses were getting killed left and right, or else put in prison. And now, 40 years after the fact, they're still coming after the Marses?
Unless she had something else on them,
said Jameson.
Something really damaging or valuable that would still be important all these years later. And the leaders today want it back. That could be what was in the safe deposit box.
Still a stretch, said Milligan.
It is a stretch, conceded Decker. But it can't be discounted. Not yet. We have to follow it up.
How? Asked Milligan.
You're talking 40 years ago, Decker. The people involved are either dead or geriatric, and since we're talking cartels, most likely dead. There are all new players now, and Colombia has really cracked down on drug trafficking in the last 2 decades. Most of the business has moved to other places, like Mexico.
All true, said Decker, but one way to follow it up is to find Roy Mars.
Bogart said, We have people looking for him, but it's a long shot. He hasn't been seen in a long time.
You're wrong there, said Decker. He was seen very recently.
What are you talking about? Asked Milligan.
Where?
In Alabama.
No one saw him in Alabama, countered Milligan.
Patricia Bray did. She saw the guy in the Avalon.
Wait a minute, interjected Bogart. Are you saying that the man who blew up Regina Montgomery was Roy Mars?
Of course it was. Right age, right physical description.
Jameson said,
Have you told Melvin that you suspect that was his dad?
No.
Are you?
I don't know, said Decker. What do you think?
Jameson looked at the others and said,
I think he has more than enough on his plate right now. Until we know for sure, I say we tell him nothing.
Agreed, said Bogart, and Milligan nodded.
But Decker, why would Roy Mars have killed Regina?
Asked Jameson. She screwed up. She spent the money he paid her. We went back there a second time. That told Mars something was up. He was staying nearby for this very reason, to see how interested we were in her. Charles Montgomery was dead. The kid would have been told nothing. Regina was the loose end. Maybe Roy intended on killing her regardless. He had no trouble dispatching Reardon and burning up his body. The guy is a killer. Milligan said, Do you think he might have worked for the cartel? Maybe as an enforcer for them? He could have met Lucinda that way. It's possible, although the cartels didn't cast a wide net back then and kept their muscle pretty much homegrown. So bringing in a white guy from America was probably not in their protocols. But he could have been in South America and met Lucinda there. Maybe he helped her escape from the cartel.
But this is all still speculation, countered Bogart. We have no proof that any of this is true.
Jameson said,
So Roy Mars paid off Montgomery to lie to get Melvin out of prison. But if Roy committed the murders for which Melvin was convicted, he framed Melvin. Why would he work so hard to get him out of prison now?
Bogart said,
I was wondering the very same thing. That seems very inconsistent.
Decker turned and gazed off.
Decker,
said Jameson.
Can you explain that?
He glanced back at her. Maybe it all comes down to a promise made.
A promise made? To whom?
Said Jameson. To Lucinda Mars. Bogart shook his head.
You've totally lost me.
Decker turned to Jameson. You remember that I asked Melvin when he was hypnotized if his father had ever told him that he loved him?
Yes, I was pretty shocked that you asked that.
I did it because I wanted to know the lay of the land.
The lay of the land? Said Milligan, looking supremely confused. Come on, Decker, it's like you're speaking in tongues.
I don't think Roy loved Melvin, but Lucinda did. I think Lucinda knew what Roy was going to do. Kill her to spare her from suffering with the brain cancer. They probably planned that part out together. Remember, this is 20 years ago, and they were in a small town with little money, and I doubt her end would have been painless. So they made that compact. Roy would kill Reardon. Lucinda switched the dental records to cover that end. Roy cleaned out the safe deposit box. He had an argument with Lucinda in which she used the word chocha. That told me she had spent time in Cali and learned her Spanish there. It also told me that she was aware that Roy was going to pretend to be dead. A possum, in other words.
But if she was part of the plan, why the argument? Asked Bogart.
Buyer's remorse. She loved her son. She was sick, dying. Even if she knew what the plan was, that doesn't mean she had to love it. She obviously didn't.
How much could she love Melvin if she let him be framed for her murder?
Asked Jameson.
He spent 2 decades in prison.
Maybe his mother thought he would be safer in prison.
This statement came from Milligan. The others looked at him. He said, Look at it this way. If they were afraid the cartel had found them through the ESPN piece, maybe they'd actually received a warning or threat. Then they knew if they didn't disappear, their death warrant was signed. But how could Melvin disappear with them? The guy was a college superstar. Everyone knew him. He was going to be drafted, play in the NFL. They could sneak off and fade away, but not him. Yet they couldn't leave him behind because the cartel would come and either kill him or torture him for information about his parents and then kill him.
Bogart said, But the cartel could have reached him in prison.
Milligan replied, Yeah, but not as easily as him being on the street. It was probably the lesser of two evils. But they also might have thought the cartel would believe that in prison, Melvin was no threat to them. And if they believed he had killed his parents, then they might have assumed that Roy and Lucinda had told them nothing about the cartel and their secrets, he added. Decker appraised the man. Agent Milligan, nice reasoning.
Milligan grinned. Thanks. And Decker, you can call me Todd. We are on the same team.
Jameson said,
Well, I'm not buying it.
They all looked at her. She continued.
To protect your son, you frame him for murder. And he gets the death penalty? Yeah, a real softer option.
Milligan said, I'm not saying it's the right answer, Jameson. I'm just saying it's possible. Bogart said,
Okay, for argument's sake, let's suppose it's true. Then why did Roy come back and do what he did to get Melvin out?
Melvin was going to be executed, said Decker immediately. And I'm thinking that Roy made a promise to his wife that if that ever came to be, he would step in and save Melvin. And he did.
Jameson said,
That's what you were referring to when you said a promise had been made?
Decker nodded. All these years later? Asked Bogart. He might have died, and then Melvin would have been up Shit Creek.
But he didn't die, and he did fulfill the promise.
In a way, he must have loved his wife very much,
said Jameson.
I believe that he did, said Decker. I can only imagine what it took to pull the trigger on that shotgun and end her life, even if he knew he was sparing her 6 months of agony.
Could you really do that to someone you loved? Asked Milligan skeptically.
I think you could only do that to someone you really loved, said Decker.
It would be the hardest thing you ever had to do, but you would do it because of that love. And I think a part of Roy Mars died that night. The only positive thing in his life was gone.
And Melvin?
Asked Jameson.
Father did not love his son. He was sorry for what he was about to do. Remember he told Melvin he was sorry that night? It was for the mother's sake, not the son's. But there's something off there, only I can't figure out what. So now the question becomes, where is Roy Mars?
Wait a minute,
said Jameson.
Maybe the cartel isn't even involved in this. Like Todd said, after 40 years, they could all be dead. Roy paid off Montgomery, got Melvin off, and then killed Regina. He could be the only one out there.
Decker shook his head. Then who kidnapped Davenport?
Roy?
Offered Jameson.
Why?
She started to say something, but then stopped.
I don't know why.
There is someone else out there, but Melvin getting out of prison triggered their interest.
Do you think they believe that Roy Mars is actually alive? Asked Milligan.
Maybe, and or that Melvin getting out of prison has once more piqued their interest about whatever was in that safe deposit box. They may hope he can lead them to it, like I suggested before.
So if the cartel took Davenport,
said Jameson slowly.
Milligan and Bogart exchanged glances. Bogart said, I won't try to sugarcoat this. The odds of us getting her back safely don't look good.
So how do we find Roy Mars? Asked Milligan, breaking an awkward silence.
Decker said, Well, I'm convinced he's close by. So one way or another, we might just run into each other.
You're joking, of course, said Milligan.
Decker didn't answer.
Chapter 49.
Decker was walking in a gray drizzle along the same route that he and Mars had earlier taken. His thoughts had turned to another facet of the case. One way to find Roy Mars was to figure out his connection to Charles Montgomery. If Mars had paid off Regina, then he had to have some connection to the Montgomerys. He hadn't picked them out of the blue. There had to be a reason, and that answer might lie in the man's past. Charles Montgomery had not told them all of the crimes of which he'd been accused. This was understandable since the list was lengthy, but Decker had done some digging. Montgomery had come back stateside and left the army in March 1967. In January 1968, he had been arrested in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, for driving while intoxicated and for possession of marijuana. Bail had been posted and he'd skipped town. A month later, he'd been stopped in Kane, Mississippi, for illegal possession of a stolen gun and drunk and disorderly. Again, he'd posted bail, and again, he'd skipped town. The crimes had not been serious enough to warrant much of a follow-up, and he apparently had never returned to either state until shooting the Alabama state trooper. And back then, there was no central database for cops across state lines. But the crimes were relatively minor, and the police, no doubt, had more pressing matters to claim their time than chasing a petty criminal. In his mind, Decker listed the offenses in chronological order. DUI and pot possession in Alabama. A stolen gun and drunken disorderly in Mississippi. Bail posted each time, and he'd skipped town each time. There was no reason to think it important, but as the drizzle hit him, Decker couldn't think it unimportant. He just didn't know why. He went back to his room and sat in his chair and stared out the window at the gathering gloom. It was barely 5 in the evening, and it looked and felt like midnight. His energy just seemed sapped.
If this weather kept up, they might all well drown without even stepping into the water. But Decker's desire to find the truth trumped the weather. His brain hit the reset button, and the key question popped up again. Why did Roy Mars pick Charles Montgomery? Montgomery's explanation of seeing Melvin's name and putting two and two together obviously had been a lie. The process had actually worked in the reverse. Montgomery hadn't found Mars. Roy Mars had selected Charles Montgomery. The only possible reason was that the two men had known each other before. And perhaps Montgomery owed Mars for some reason. And that reason, coupled with the inducement of the money to be left to Regina Montgomery and their son, was enough for the condemned Montgomery to lie about killing Roy and Lucinda Mars. But how and where had they previously met? Both men were about the same age. Roy Mars was not the man's real name, so he could have been in the military with Montgomery over in Nam. They had no fingerprints from Mars to compare with in the military database. Yet had they been in the military together? Maybe Mars had saved Montgomery's life over there. That seemed plausible. But if not in Vietnam, where? Had Mars been a petty criminal too? If he were connected to the cartel, then Montgomery might have been in South America at some point, or in Mexico, or in some way had been connected with the drug trade. He had told them of his pain problem and his quest to steal money and drugs in order to deal with his headaches. Had Montgomery known Lucinda? Was that the angle to come at this by? Decker rubbed his eyes and then closed them. Even for his exceptional mind, this was a staggering conundrum. He could not find traction anywhere. Every time he thought he had something figured out, another question of even greater complexity took its place, like a vanquished cancer cell being replaced by an even more malignant and entrenched one. But something in the back of Decker's brain told him that if he could find the connection between the two men, many other questions might be answered. He opened his eyes and looked out the window. Somewhere out there, Lisa Davenport was being held against her will, and perhaps tortured. Or she might already be dead. Decker had concluded that his first assumption had been wrong. They had not. Chapter 51. Now it's you who's lucky. Decker blinked his eyes open. Mars was staring down at him.
I don't feel lucky, he groaned.
Join the club. Decker looked around.
Where am I?
Hospital. You got a concussion. Side of your head looks like you got in a fight with Ray Lewis.
That's what I feel like, actually.
He tried to sit up, but Mars put out a restraining hand. Whoa, big fella, you ain't going anywhere. Decker lay back.
Where are the others?
Bogart and Milligan are trying to figure out what happened. Jameson sat next to your bed for hours. She just left to use the bathroom. Expect her back any second. Pretty loyal to you, that lady. Decker gazed up at him.
I guess I don't always realize those things.
Mars pulled up a chair and sat down. I did some research on your condition. He tapped his head. Up here.
Why?
Because I wanted to understand you better. It's like studying film and then making a game plan.
And what did you find out?
That is complicated. You're complicated. No two cases are really alike. You could change tomorrow if your brain keeps rewiring itself. Pretty dicey.
I guess that's why I live for today, quipped Decker.
Mars grinned. You and me both. Then his grin faded. Was it him?
Who?
You know who, Decker. My old man. Did he do this to you? The door opened and Jameson appeared there. When she saw that Decker was awake, she rushed over.
Oh my God, Amos, how are you feeling?
Alive. That's about it. But I'll be fine.
Mars said, Decker was just about to tell us who walloped him. Jameson gasped.
You know you saw the person?
It was your father, Melvin. At least I'm 99% sure it was.
So you didn't see him?
I heard him. He had a knife against my jugular during our conversation. He knew about everything.
Did he use my name? Asked Mars.
Yes. Well, sort of.
What exactly did he call me?
Mellow.
Mars looked away and rubbed his chin with his hand.
Right. What's the reference?
His joke, since I was the exact opposite of mellow, he was the only one who ever called me that. The only one.
So it was him,
said Jameson. Pretty sure, yeah, said Mars. He was also a smoker, said Decker. So was my father.
What else did he say, Amos?
Asked Jameson. Decker slowly told them, but leaving out some parts, particularly those in reference to how Roy Mars really felt about his son. Mars said slowly, So he's saying he did this to protect me? He got me out probably because my mother made him promise? He didn't actually say that, but when I made the statement, he didn't dispute it. But one thing puzzles me. He said he hadn't set you up. When it was clear that he had, Mars nodded. But my mom knew what he was going to do. That he was going to frame me and then play dead. Chocha, like you said. Decker and Jameson gazed nervously at him.
She probably thought you'd be safer in prison, Melvin,
suggested Jameson. Yeah, so safe I nearly died.
She had terminal brain cancer. I doubt she was thinking all that clearly. And it was pretty obvious that she didn't like the plan. That was why they were arguing.
But he still went ahead and screwed me over, and she went along with it. A long moment of silence passed. We can argue forever about what was in their heads, Melvin, said Decker at last. But it won't change things. Right, I know. But it still sucks, said Decker. Yeah, it does. Jameson glanced at him and attempted to quickly change the subject.
But now you don't think it's the cartel out there behind this?
Roy snorted because he thought I was going down the wrong path when I mentioned the cartel. When I reversed course on that, he clammed up.
And Davenport?
Asked Jameson in a tremulous voice. Unfortunately, he didn't sound so hopeful about her. But he said he was covering my back, said Mars. Decker looked at him. The pleading look in the man's face was painful to see. He did say that, Melvin. He was going to do his best to protect you. Because of my mother. I don't think it's all that. He said you got screwed. Maybe he feels remorse. I don't think so, said Mars slowly. I'm not sure the guy can feel anything.
Whatever your father feels or doesn't feel about you, Melvin, has nothing to do with you,
said Jameson firmly.
It's his issue, not yours.
Decker said, The man could wield a knife, and though he's in his 70s, he's still physically formidable. I'm not easy to knock out, but he managed it. He always was strong as a bull, said Mars absently. There is a connection between your father and Montgomery, said Decker. He as good as admitted that. If we can find that nexus, we may be able to determine who is behind all this. Jameson said,
Maybe we should take Roy's advice and get Melvin far away from here.
Mars said immediately, I'm not going anywhere. Decker added, I agree. If I'm reading this right, it won't matter where Melvin goes. It was also clear that Roy felt that whoever he was hiding from is after what's in the safe deposit box.
But no clue as to what that is?
Asked Jameson. It's obviously something important. But if not a cartel, what? Asked Mars. What could my old man have been involved in all those years ago? Decker said, He's a dangerous man, Melvin. That may be an indicator. He kills people. What, like he was some sort of hired hitman? I don't know for certain. I'm just saying that it wouldn't have surprised me if someone had used him as muscle. Mars rose, went over to the window, and looked out. The man was a picture of confused despair. In a low voice, Jameson said to Decker,
This is really hard on him. I can't even imagine.
I can imagine, said Decker. But the only way to get him out of this mess is to figure it out. Otherwise, he's going to be looking over his shoulder the rest of his life.
You really think we can do that?
Yes, if they don't kill us first.
Chapter 52 I'm having the local police post round-the-clock security at the entrance to the motel, Amos, said Bogart. I should have done that after they took Davenport, he added apologetically. I had someone posted outside Melvin's and Jameson's doors, but not yours.